Well, good afternoon. Thank you for that introduction. So yes, I'm going to be focusing on the diversity of diazotrophic bacteria, but also looking at their abundances and rates among Australian cropping soils. And we're really going to put this in the context of spatial heterogeneity and the drivers that drive differences in diversity composition, as well as activities and numbers. So why are we interested in this in Australia? Well, because there's been an increased adoption of intensive cropping methods, and the area under consecutive cereal crops has consistently risen. Fertilizer in use has increased at an annual rate of about 10%, but the current day farming techniques can actually support a habitat that promotes the activity of the non-symbiotic nitrogen fixers. And it's going to occur both during the off-season and in-crop through the interplay of microsites with carbon availability. This nitrogen-fixing capacity has the ability to provide multiple benefits besides just adding nitrogen. And some of those would include disease suppression, particularly in Australia, in cereal crops of Rhizoctonia solani AG8, and other benefits as well. So, of course, we do have many unknowns. And one of the largest questions is, does the amount of N-fixed actually have any agronomic significance from these free-living nitrogen fixers? But also, what can we do to maximize the contribution? What are the factors that contribute to their activities? Well, these include the soil types, crop types, the environment, which can include precipitation, temperature, management factors, till, no-till, burning, as well as seasonal variation. And one of the questions is, who is there? You know, not only who is there, but what are they doing? Now, if you saw my presentation yesterday, you would recognize this figure. This shows some of the different drivers of microbial community structure across different scales. These drivers do not affect community composition across all scales, with the exception, really, of carbon quality. It's really a large driver. Now, of course, instead of the entire microbial community being the bacterial community structure, we're looking at a functional community. So we're going to address the drivers of this nitrogen functional community across these different scales. So we're going to start off with a sequencing run here, targeting the NIFH gene using this one was IonTorrent platform, which we validated the error rates with a muck community. We're looking at this on a continental scale, so we have five sites. These five sites vary very greatly in percent clay, carbon, pH, among other factors. And within each one of these sites, we also examined the management practices, organic matter addition through stubble retention, nitrogen fertilizer addition, and tillage. So we're going to start off with our diversity. You can see right off the top that our two clay verdosol soils gave us the highest diversity. This was followed by the two calcareous sandy loams, and lastly, the sandy soil. These are some pie charts of the top 20 or so NIFH OTUs. You can see that the verdosol is very different, just in patterns, from the calcareous and the sandy soils. Now, why is that? Well, we're going to keep on coming back to a word here, microsites, a theme. The verdosol, being a high clay, has the highest diversity because of the large abundance of microsites. Microsites that can provide an ecological opportunity, an opportunity for populations of nitrogen-fixing taxa to reside and thrive. Sandy soils have the lowest diversity, and really, functionally, we see nitrogen fixation only on the roots and decomposing residues in sandy soils. Lastly, the calcareous soils, we found that they had the highest proportion of unclassified genera, and this is something that we've seen at the entire microbial community level as well. So, soil type is a driver, sure. A soil type is really a name and encompasses many different factors. So here are the soil properties that are influencing the community structure. So here's our NIFH community structure. Plotted, we have our sandy soil down here, our two verdosols here, our calcareous soils over here. The main drivers are percent clay, sand, bulk density, CEC, and organic carbon. And really, these are proxies for our soil types. We also have a environmental factor, mean annual precipitation, driving the composition of these communities as well. If we look at the two matrices, the biological and the environmental matrices, we see that the highest correlation is with percent clay alone. Again, going back to that microsite theme, these differences in community structure are significant according to Perminova. So we have the soil type factors as well as these larger continental global scale factors that are playing a role, such as mean annual temperature, mean annual precipitation. So now we're going to go from this continental scale to a regional scale. When we looked at all those soils at the continental scale, management is not playing a significant influence. But if we look at the regional scale, now going to the same soil type, these are the two Vertisols, Hermitage and Collins A, we can see clear differences, this is a cluster dendrogram, between the burnt management technique and the stubble retained management. With Collins A, the other Vertisol, we both have stubble, but one is receiving a dose of nitrogen. And you can see that these communities are different according to the cluster dendrogram, but also are statistically different according to Perminova. So at the regional scale, we have this interplay between soil type and now management. Let's go on down to the field scale. At the field scale, this is a study actually using TRFLP. This is one site, two groups of plants. We have wheat in two different strategies, a no-till and a strategic management. And all of these are our perennial grasses. Cluster dendrogram shows that the wheat is outgrouped from the perennial grasses, and in fact that is a significant difference, as well as treatment here. The management technique also played a significant role in shaping the community. We also find that there's significantly higher diversity in the grasses, but the question remains, we're talking about diversity right now, what about the NFH genetic potential? What about their numbers, their abundances? Are they similar or do they differ? So we're going to go back to this theme about clay and the clay microsites. Here we have NFH copy number assessed through quantitative PCR. And on the bottom, we have increasing clay content. You see we have a very nice regression here with an R-squared value of about 0.84 once we remove this one outlier. Now, stubble is our proxy for carbon as well in the field. We have two different sites here, Wackery, which is a sandy soil, and Bouveroe, which is a 30% clay soil. When we add stubble to Wackery, we really don't see any difference in the NFH copy number of diazotrophic bacteria. But in the clay soil, once we add stubble, we get a 5-time increase approximately. So again, there is an interplay between the soil type, the clay with the microsites that promote the diversity, but is also reacting now to increasing carbon, whereas the sandy soils are not. So another study based on carbon. Now we're down to the plot scale. We have two different crops, a wheat and a cereal rye, planted in a dune swale habitat within the field. As we go from left to right on this graph, these different environments got a larger quantity of stubble added. So we see a general trend here that as we add stubble, our amount of nitrogen fixed per kilogram of soil increases. But there's actually a second component to this. It's a temporal component. That's because there's a December harvest. So past December through January through May, you're going to decrease the quality and the quantity of your stubble that's been added. So if you look at this at a temporal scale, it's not very clear in some of these figures, but for example, right here in the dune, we get a very nice decrease of our nitrogen fixing potential temporally that correlates with our decreasing carbon availability and quantity and quality from our stubble. So the question is this really due to carbon? So on the y-axis here, we have our nitrogen fixation rate, or the amount that was fixed. And as we go down the x-axis to the right, we are adding more carbon in the form of glucose. And sure enough, in both of these sites, we are increasing the amount of nitrogen fixed. But yes, glucose is not a great proxy for stubble, for complex media. So we actually did this as well with combined carbon mediums, and we get pretty much the same trend no matter what we use. So at the plot scale, again, what happens when we add mineral nitrogen, fertilizer nitrogen? So we're going to look again at this interplay between different soil types. Here we have a clay. Over here we have Wackery with a sand. with the clay soils when we had a fertilizer added with stubble and fertilizer added when stubble was incorporated, we see a very large decrease in the amount of nitrogen fix. So we're really inhibiting the nitrogen fixing there with the application of fertilizer. But in a sandy soil where nitrogen fixation is mostly associated with decomposing residues or roots, we do not really see that large of a change with the application of fertilizer. So what does this mean? Well, it means that at the continental scale, at these different scales, we have different drivers of not only community diversity, but also of their abundances and of their activities. At the continental scale, we have soil type as a driver and all the proxies that form that soil type, that percent clay, percent sand, etc. At the regional scale, that's when management techniques can start to play a role with an interplay with soil type. At the field scale, we saw the plants can actually influence the community structure as well. And at the plot scale, that's when really the carbon and nitrogen start to influence their activities, their numbers, and how they interplay with the specific soil types, as the specific soil types react differently. This is a small section of a larger study. What has been proposed is that across global scales, it is the composition of the diazotrophic community that drives fixation. But when you get down to the smaller scales, to the field, to the plot scales, it's really the genetic potential, the numbers of nitrogen-fixing bacteria that drive fixation rates. And one of the big questions, is this agronomically significant? Well, at least in Australia, in these cereal crops, it can be. It can range from less than 0.15 to 2.3 milligrams in fix per kilogram per soil per day. And if you extrapolate this to the time period where we really see nitrogen fixation occurring, then it can contribute up to about 40% of the fertilizer in that's added to the system. So all in all, there is a potential for a genetic times functional times management potential in order to increase in fixation rates through the free-living diazotrophic community. And a lot of it depends on the soil types and other factors that are present at those sites. So with that, I'd like to give the acknowledgments. This study was performed mostly by Gupta Vedakattu at Cicero and his colleagues. Jim Teege, I'd like to acknowledge as well, as my previous mentor at MSU CME. And the funding came from Soil Biology Initiative 2 and SAGET. Thank you.
We have time for some questions. So, would you give some idea of how much you don't per hectare basis nitrogen fixation?
How much what?
Per hectare basis.
Per hectare? I had those numbers. He gave them to me and I left them on a piece of paper. So I apologize. I apologize. Roughly, I couldn't give you a rough. I'm sorry.
And this is, you're looking at the bulk of soil or you're looking at nitrogen here?
No, this is all bulk of soil. And the diversity analysis was also done in the non-cropping time so that there was no rhizospheric influence.
Well, you did mention it's 3% of fertilizer, something you mentioned. What is that? 3% of fertilizer?
It could range up to 30% of the fertilizer in that's applied to the field, 30 to 40% of the fertilizer.
30 to 40% of fertilizer applied.
Right.
How much you're applying?
I don't know those numbers offhand either. I'm the microbiologist in this group. Sorry about that. I could get you that information if you want. Yes.
Yeah, I just want to ask a question. You mentioned this study is a volunteer study, and you are a microbiologist. Have you looked at the diversity among the nitrogen fixers? And whether this diversity was affected by crop type?
So with TRFLP, you know, we had the differences according to plant type. With the ion torrent sequencing of the NFH, we had differences with the management as well as soil type. That's about as far as we, you know, went into with the ion torrent data, with the deep sequencing. As with any NFH sequencing, most of the issues that are encountered are due to the lack of coverage of the available primers right now. Polyprimers are the best, but still they're only covering about 30 to 40% of the total NIFH diversity that's assessed in databases. So the biggest push out there really needs to be, if we're going to look at diversity, redesigning these primers for these new systems and for better coverages.
When these
things
fix where identify them, then I should.
Yeah, well, we can identify them down to... So this is an issue with NIFH when you're targeting a functional gene. NIFH is horizontally transferred, and there's quite a bit of horizontal transfer. So when you try to actually identify who is there, you really don't have confidence in going down to even a genus level because of this horizontal transfer. The best way to describe NIFH is really through the clusters and the subclusters as it's defined through there. This has been a subject of debate for probably 6 months now on the fact that we really cannot say that infixer X is here due to that sequence because of the horizontal gene transfer.
When these insertions have the gene fixer?
They're indigenous. The majority of these are more associated with the alpha proteobacteria. And where we get the shifts happening between different management types are mainly differences in relative abundances of OTUs within the alpha proteobacteria. We don't have a whole lot of changes, shifts according to plant or management influences across, like from the gamma to the alpha. We see those changes according to soil type, more with the clay versus sandy soils.
Sorry, I missed. How did you come up this number, 0.15 to 2.3 milligrams? Did you say it?
Yes, it is. It is there. So, I don't know exactly how he did it. Nope. I will have to. Yep. His student was supposed to come and present this, and I took over for doing the sequencing on this as well. But I could, again, email me, and I can get you all that information. Sorry about that.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.